Hello, listening friends. We hope you all are taking every opportunity to enjoy the fall season. We want to stretch it out as long as possible before winter is upon us. I guess I speak for myself, as some of you love the cold months and snow. Today, we're introducing you to our new spotlight segment on pieces that have received a lot of attention from you all on our Instagram account. We have another great refinishing tip, and we are continuing our discussion on pricing with a special emphasis on custom bookings and contracts, plus a few noteworthy announcements in our newsworthy segment. This is Zebras Before and After. I'm your host, Lane Ball. We are excited to offer a new segment to our podcast where we spotlight work that has received a lot of attention in the community. For Zebra, our weekly highlights include our daily post of a refinishing piece that deserves recognition. The following week, we review those posts to see which one received the most attention. By the way, every Monday, we highlight a piece that is a close-up shot, well-staged and framed. We do this under the hashtag ZebraFurnitureArt. And then on Fridays, we choose a piece that has had a dramatic transformation. We feature the before and after so folks can see the difference. These pieces are chosen under the hashtag ZebraDrama. For the week of August 24th through the 29th, the piece that several in the community were raving about was a piece by Shelley with Basalt Mesa Studio. It was a long-legged secretary vanity that turned out quite stunning. We are excited to take a few moments to talk with Shelley about her piece. It's great to have you on, Shelley. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Lane. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, for sure. Now, before we get started, let's make sure we get to know you a little bit better. Now, you live in Orchard Mesa, Colorado?
Right. I live in Orchard Mesa. It's just a suburb of Grand Junction. It's up at the top of the hill near the Colorado River.
And I bet it is beautiful out there.
It is beautiful. It is still a little smoky from all of the fires that we've had, but fall now, and usually fall here is just gorgeous. The weather is perfect. It's great bicycling weather and just super pretty.
Now, are you from Colorado?
No, I've lived in Colorado for about 35 years in the Grand Junction area for just a little over a year. I lived in Rifle before that, which is about 60 miles to the east.
You're still seeing a lot of smoke in the air.
Yeah, we had a couple weeks of terrible smoke here because Colorado just had some massive, massive wildfires. Mm-hmm. Of our fires are contained now, and I think most of the smoke that we're getting now is from the West Coast in California and Oregon. So it is a little hazier right now than it normally is, but mm-hmm. Beautiful soon. We'll get through this.
Boy, it's so traumatic to hear about those fires, and so we wish the best for everybody that's out there.
Right.
You know, speaking of the weather, though, it's so funny because I looked. You know, I have this sort of weather obsession, so I was curious about Orchard Mesa. So I pulled up my weather app, and My word, Shelley, all I see is sun forecasted for like the next 10 days and upper 80s. So aside, obviously, so aside from the smoke, this is normal for this time of year?
Yeah, it is. It is usually pretty dry in the fall. We do sometimes get some afternoon thunder showers, which we super hope for because it's been so dry. Yeah, and the colors will start to really pop on the Grand Mesa, which is to the east of us here. And it's just beautiful country here. I mean, just every direction you go, you can find some amazing postcard view somewhere. So yeah, it's a really inspirational place to live. And I've loved Colorado since I was old enough to think for myself. And I just had always wanted to live here and managed to land here about 35 years ago and raised my daughter here with my husband. And yeah, we just love everything about it.
So how long have you been refinishing furniture?
At the level I'm doing it now, only about a year. I have always been a DIYer. So I did a lot of furniture for my own purposes and just kind of fell in love with the process. I really like furniture and a single piece can do for a space. It's really hard now to do pieces that I fall in love with that I can't keep.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, I think everybody goes through that. I mean, I finished a buffet not very long ago that I literally had to choke back tears when the buyer came and picked it up. But it was a really special piece. So,
Well, we're eager to hear about your piece that received the Zebra Weekly pick. Tell us about it, starting with how you obtained it and then how you went about this particular design.
Okay. Yeah, I found this piece at a estate sale. It was kind of tucked back into a corner with a whole bunch of miscellaneous on top of it. And it just, honestly, it was the legs that caught my eye. I just haven't worked with a piece that had such long, slender, curvy legs like that. It was just a really pretty piece. And so I offered them, you know, a really low ball offer, and they took it. And I was just super happy to get my hands on it. And I sat with it for a while and had seen some other pieces done in some blues that I really liked. So I'm a brand ambassador for House and Canvas, and they have that color Whisper that I just think is such a nice neutral blue. I thought I would use it. So with the style of the piece, that it would also look really good with a kind of a chippy distressed finish. And that really added to the piece. But the legs, I really like bare wood, and I kind of always try to incorporate some bare wood or some whitewash or, you know, light stain, because I kind of lean toward the softer finish on a piece right now. Some color scares me a little bit. I'm just not experienced enough to really go with dramatic color. So I thought, well, I'm going to try to enhance these legs with a partial sand back and see what this ombre finish would look like. And that turned out to be a real win for this piece. I just loved the way it looked. As soon as I finished it, I thought, wow, this is great. So that, and then the top part of it was missing the mirror. I had contemplated replacing the mirror, but then I thought, I tried a couple different things up there. I painted a couple of different colors. I put a transfer up there. And then finally, I was just kind of inspired by looking at the piece at that point and thinking about, you know, a girl perhaps sitting at that studying with all this homeschooling going on, and just, I thought maybe the note string with some encouraging words on it would be a win for that piece. And once I put that on there, I just felt like, wow, that kind of finished it off and really, really gave it its character. I think it kind of pulled the whole thing together for me.
It really completed it, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It has kind of that shabby chic look, and yeah, it was really a fun piece, kind of a departure from what I normally do. And I really enjoyed doing the piece. It really came together nice.
Now I'm looking at a picture, which is the before. It's probably what it was when you picked it up.
Right.
What did it have? It looks like it has some, does it have any veneer damage to it, or is that just some paint marks on it on the right side?
Yeah, no, this piece is solid oak. There's no veneer on it that I know of. You know, I worked it over pretty good, and no, it's oak, and once I prepped it and got it ready for paint, there was just really no actual repair that had to be done to it. I did leave the drawers looking kind of rough along the edges and added the little stencil on the side to kind of dress it up. And I think it just kind of, sometimes wear and tear on a piece kind of adds a little something. And so, yeah, it was a fairly easy, straightforward piece to prep, actually.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of the balance between, you know, refinishing a piece, designing a new piece, and yet giving it that worn look, because it is an older design. So you want to be able to maintain that. And you did that really well. Let's go to the legs and talking about that sort of ombre effect that you have. Did you paint the entire legs and then you sanded back to the natural? What was that process for you like?
No, I went ahead while I was prepping the piece and sanded back all of the varnish and stain on there, just a little past where I thought I would bring the paint down to join. And then I whitewashed a little bit on the legs. And then when I brought the Whisper color down on top of that, I just kind of brush blended and then finger blended it a little bit into the raw wood. And then the whole entire piece was white waxed. And that just kind of really hold those two elements together.
And you also kept the, it looks like you kept the original hardware.
Yes, this piece had beautiful solid brass hardware. I just polished it up. I just left it as it is. It's just really beautiful. A lot of these older pieces are missing hardware and, you know, or have just not really great hardware. But this hardware on this piece was really a big bonus on this little guy.
And you mentioned, I think a few seconds ago, that you stenciled the inside, well, on the side of the drawers.
Yeah, just on the outside edge of the drawer, mm-hmm. and a little something. I really like details. A lot of times, a detail of a really thrashed piece will catch my eye, and then I'll just kind of focus on that through the whole process. But I thought that drawer needed just a little something on the outside of it, because it was a little rough around the edge, so gives it a little bit of bling.
Yeah, that's fun too, because what you've done is you've created surprises throughout, really, when you do something like that. Because when you're seeing it before you pull the drawer out, you're admiring it, then you pull the drawer out and you're like, oh, how cool. Creativity all around this piece. That's fun,
right?
Now, you also, I noticed in the picture and in your post, you have a chair. Did you do the chair at the same time, and did you reupholster the chair? Tell us a little bit about that.
I did. I actually, once I finished the secretary, I thought, well, I need to find a chair for it because, you know, it's a desk and it needs a chair. So I looked around a little bit and I found this chair at Goodwill. It was a real dark cherry stain chair, and the seat bottom was actually in good shape. So I did. I brought it home, painted it up to match the vanity, and then I use, a lot of times I will use painter's canvas and make a design, I'll just make a stencil. The design for this seat, I kind of pulled from the applique that's on the front of the secretary door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of free-handed a design that would capture the same curvy lines, and then just kind of hand drew a stencil. And then I cut that out, painted it, and then I sanded it with sandpaper, and then I wash it, and that kind of gives it a kind of a neat worn look. It's pretty durable. Painter's canvas is cotton. And so once it's finished and I get it put onto the seat bottom, I use, what is this stuff called, to treat it so it's stained, so it's protected from stain.
Like a Scotchgard?
Yeah, Scotchgard. I'm sorry, I lost that word. And then put it all together, and it's good to go. So it kind of pulled it all together.
You always find it interesting when it comes to refinishing, because there's so many facets to it. And of course, we don't talk a lot about upholstery, but upholstery is a big part of furniture refinishing as well, depending on what you're doing, what you're working on. Was this difficult? I mean, I guess I should back up and say, is it difficult to upholster?
No, not really. I upholstered my sofa and loveseat quite a few years ago, and really all I did was deconstruct the piece and then kind of pull it apart, cut the fabric to rebuild it, and just kind of rebuild it backwards. Doing seats and things like this on these small chairs and little things like that is really not hard at all. You need, you know, a staple gun, good quality fabric, and then usually I'll replace the foam and the batting on the inside. I like a rounder looking seat, so normally I'll add some additional padding. Just gives it a little bit of an upgrade, but it's all a matter of taste. Whoever's doing it likes it. It usually kind of pulls it together, putting something new on there.
Well, I think what you said was key when it comes to upholstery, I would imagine, is that you said deconstructing the piece, because when you deconstruct it, you're keeping the patterns of the fabric and even the foam or whatever is used to create the padding. I have to ask you this. Did you sell this desk?
Yeah, this piece sold, just last week. I'm stunned at how far people will drive to buy my art. And I'm so that people have found my shop and what I do, and they love it and they want it. And so the same people that bought my buffet have come back and bought this desk. So it's awesome. They just love it, and they've remodeled their house and they want my furniture in it. And I'm just grateful and excited about it.
Now, just briefly, tell us, you know, how you're set up with respect to selling your furniture. You're obviously on Instagram, mm-hmm. But do you have any other social media accounts that you use to promote your pieces?
I do. I have My Basalt Mesa studio is on Instagram, Facebook. In the future, I'm planning on setting up a website. Most of my pieces are listed on Facebook Marketplace. I would like to get to the point where I don't have to list on there anymore. But for now, that's kind of where I'm going. More recently, I've had a lot of word of mouth clients for custom work. And it's just amazing how much, you know, once your pieces get out there and someone sees it and they start talking to their friends and it kind of comes to, you know, it reaches a point where I'm getting probably more business than through word of mouth than I am probably through Marketplace right now. But yeah, I have a couple of big pieces in my shop right now that I'm excited to finish up and get on there as well.
You did a phenomenal job on this piece. Congratulations on getting the most likes for the Zebra Weekly pick. And, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation with you, Shelley. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Wayne, I appreciate it. And thank you so much. I just really, really appreciate all the support.
This podcast is sponsored by Zebra, makers of the high-end yet affordable line of application-specific paintbrushes. Zebra's new website is up at enjoyzebra.com, and we invite you to take it for a test drive. Test drive, because it's more than an ordinary product website. There is plenty of inspiration for you, as well as a really cool quiz that guides you to the ideal Zebra paintbrush you need for your painting application. You can peruse the products that range from our paintbrushes, of course, to our latest apron designs, to our new paintbrush kit offerings. That, I might add, come in a really unique canvas bag, and any purchase over $35 or more means free shipping for those living in the United States. If you have a refinishing tip that you would like to share, send me an email at lane@enjoyzebra.com. Put refinishing tip in the subject line and describe the tip in the email. Today's refinishing tip comes from Melissa with Mel Did It Herself.
Hi, everybody. It's Mel from Mel Did It Herself, and I'm here to share my refinishing tip to keep costs low on prices, because obviously you want to keep your prices low so that you get the highest profit when you're selling a piece. And one way that I do this is on garbage day in my area. I live in a suburban part of Ottawa, which is a big city. So there's lots of families around in my area who are always giving away pieces. So early in the morning before the garbage trucks go by on garbage day, I will grab my coffee and grab my screwdriver and go for a walk around the different areas in my neighborhood. And I'll look. And often there's pieces that I wouldn't necessarily either have the space for because my garage is getting pretty full, or it might not be like the quality that I'm looking for. But there's always hardware on them. So I'll grab the knobs or the hinges and stuff like that, because that way I'm saving it from going to the landfill. And as well, then I don't have to pay for the different hardware. If I come across a piece that I do want to switch out the hardware on, I have some free ones in my stash. And obviously, since it is a pandemic right now, I do always bring Purell with me, because you never know what kind of germs are in the households that the pieces are coming from. But always stay safe that way. And then when I bring the things home, I always give them a good clean before putting them in my stash. So hope that helps somebody out there. And happy refinishing. If you need to contact me, I'm on Instagram at meldidherself, or you can email me at meldidherself@gmail.com. Thanks. Bye.
What a great way to get vintage hardware for free, Melissa. Thanks for sharing your tip. One topic that probably gets more attention and requests from refinishers than any other is the matter of pricing. I wonder why. Isn't everyone in refinishing in the business of philanthropic work, giving away all of your beautiful pieces? I jest in saying that. I'm sure you all do that with friends and family from time to time, but you need to make money to have a successful refinishing business. And to be successful financially, you have to make sure you price your piece as well. Let's dive into our discussion on custom bookings and contracts. Well, today we are going to hear from Danielle with Soulful Collections to learn about how she prices her custom bookings. Hi, Danielle. How are you?
I'm great, Lane. How are you today?
I'm good as well. Listen, you're in Grand Junction, Colorado. You know, I have never been to Colorado, but the pictures of Grand Junction that I looked up are absolutely amazing. They're beautiful out there.
Yes, we live in a valley that is on the western slope of Colorado, and we are very blessed to be around such beautiful landscape, from desert to mountains to rivers to lakes. It's just a beautiful state, and we're able to, it's our personal playground. So Colorado's beautiful.
My word, now how do you even decide what to do when the weekend comes?
Oh, well, the area that we live in is very well known for biking, hiking, rafting, ATVs, camping. I mean, you name it, anything outdoors, that's our state. So, and we have pretty mild temperatures throughout the year, so you're able to experience all of those fun things through the entire year.
So we just chatted with Shelley with Basalt Mesa Studios in Orchard Mesa, Colorado. Now, you aren't that too far from her, I believe.
No, we're not too far, actually. We live about an hour away from each other, and it's nice because we both try to incorporate a lot of our home state in our work. You know, anywhere from putting mountains on a piece of furniture to just the natural landscape of our area we use in our staging props. So it's nice to talk to another refinisher in my area that kind of understands and gets what we're going for. So, and it's nice to be able to bounce ideas from someone too. So,
you know, have you guys ever met up?
We haven't. We actually have plans to do a coffee date this next week. So we've chatted on Instagram and through email, but we have plans to meet up and hang out.
That's cool. That's nice to forge those relationships through the same industry and to meet people. It's so fun because so many people have established really strong relationships from people, you know, across the country or even across the ocean. So, furniture refinishing binds people together, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. I have made a lot of really great connections on Instagram over the last several years of my business. And it's really fun because you now have friends that you've met through this community that are, you know, worried about your kids. How, you know, when the pandemic hit, we had a lot of people reach out to us and ask, like, how our state was doing, you know, what's your school system look like? How are your kids doing? How are you guys doing? So it's been great being able to have a community of friends here on this platform. And I love it. Love being able to, you know, if we have an issue on a piece of furniture, being able to reach out to someone and ask questions about it without any reservation. And it's very easy to do that. So I love that this is my second home, and my business is just, it's another platform where I'm able to talk to a close friend and just be able to vent to someone about my frustrations, whether that be about my personal life or my business. So yeah, it's great.
So I bet you've heard from a lot of people asking and checking on you guys about the fires, because there's fires in Colorado. And then of course the smoke that you're getting from California. How is it right now?
Well, right now the sky is pretty clear, but just about a month ago, we had one of the largest wildfires in Colorado. It's called the Pine Gulch Fire, and it kind of just took off. It burned 179,000 acres, and it was really, we live in a valley where the book cliffs behind us started to burn up, and that's where that fire had originally started. So we had firefighter teams from all over the country come and respond to that fire, and it's devastating to see our home state be completely burned up. And in that same week, we had another large fire about an hour and a half away from where we live that they finally contained. It was the main route from the western part of Colorado to Denver. So there was a lot of issues with having to travel around the state. So we had also in Fort Collins, Denver area, there were two other wildfires. So just in the 2 weeks, we had four fires going in just the state of Colorado. Mm-hmm. So for the longest time, we weren't able to, and there's some other furniture refinishers in Colorado that can relate, that we weren't able to photograph anything because of the lighting. Mm-hmm. It was really gloomy and smoky in our areas. And there was a lot of ash. I can remember waking up one morning and opening the front door to take my kids to school, and our entire street and driveway and door and car was just covered in ash. It made it very difficult for applying top coats to items because we couldn't open garages or workshops, and it was just really hard.
But things are improving now.
Oh yeah, they've got all of the fires 100% contained, but we're now seeing a lot of smoke from the California wildfires coming mm-hmm. this way. So some days you'll wake up and the sky is very gloomy and the sun is blocked out, and you get that like really rich smoke smell in the air. But mm-hmm. I think that it's starting to kind of make its way past our area, which is great. So.
Yeah. Well, normally you guys have phenomenal weather. I mean, I guess you're known for that. Just a lot of sun.
We are. So where we're from in Colorado, it's the western part of the state. A lot of people think that, you know, Colorado mountains, cold weather. But we're actually in the part that's closer to the Utah border. We have a lot of desert landscape, but we also have the mountains. Mm-hmm. So it's very mild climate. Today is probably our coldest day out of the entire week. We're down, I think the high is supposed to be 71 today, but the rest of the week is still mid 80s. Our winters are very mild. We probably get about 1 to 2 inches of snow in the area that we are. And if you want to go play and ski and sled and snowboard, you can travel about an hour up into the mountains where we're from and be able to do that. So it's nice that we're close to a bunch of different things. But yeah, the weather here is really mild and we're able to have a personal playground.
Well, it sounds so nice. Well, now, how long have you been refinishing furniture?
Well, I have been refinishing furniture for about 6 years. It kind of started out as just a hobby for myself. I was doing pieces for my house, and I love to do design in my own home. And I was just picking things up from garage sales, or we would go to estate sales or, rummage places and find some things. And I thought, oh, okay, I could update this piece of furniture. You know, it would look great in my home, this color. And I actually reached out to another refinisher here in Grand Junction, and she was the one that gave me the tools and the paint that I needed to start refinishing. And so it kind of just grew on me, and I was like, oh man, this is something that I really like. It's my creative outlet. I'm able to do what I want to on whatever piece of furniture that is, and it kind of just evolved from there. So I didn't open up my actual business until 2 years after that. So I've had Soulful Collections open for the last 4 years. And just over that course of the 4 years, it's been great because I've learned a lot of lessons. I've really had a feel for our market. I'm able to be creative. And it's fun because my kids get to help me out in my business too, whether that be like vacuuming something out or wiping it down. And my oldest daughter is an artist also, and it's fun for her to come out and be able to experiment and do things on her own too. So I love what I do. I'm very passionate about it. I love to be able to go and hunt for pieces. I travel all over the state of Colorado and to be able to go and look for things, but I really do love what I do. And it's peaceful. It's just my really fun creative outlet that I never thought that I would have. I actually went to college for biochemistry, and I never thought that I would come into this line of work. It was kind of just a fun hobby that had started and kind of took off.
So how would you classify your design style?
I love mid-century modern, and I love to be bold. I love to, use colors.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I don't say that like, oh my gosh, how could you like MCM? I just find it interesting with MCM. And so my question is, have you always been an MCM fan, or did that kind of develop as you got into furniture refinishing?
You know, it's funny that you say that because my style had changed dramatically over the last, I would say probably 3 years ago. My great grandmother had some really great MCM pieces in her storage shed. And when she had passed, I rummaged through a couple of her tables, and I really grew to like the style. And I love the clean lines and just a lot of the wood pieces in those particular furniture pieces. And mm-hmm. it best represented my grandparents. So I try to incorporate a lot of what their style was like then, you know, even down to just some of the antique art pieces that they had or candy dishes and things like that. So MCM is definitely my favorite type of piece. It used to be a lot of more antique pieces, like what you would expect to see in Colorado. So, you know, china hutches and buffets and things like that. But yeah, my style just kind of evolved into something a little bit more modern. Mm-hmm. And it's rare that you see that in our area because a lot of mountain towns has a lot of the more detailed wood pieces and antiques. And it's very rare to see the MCM around in our area.
Well, I see it. Your Instagram account has sort of a nice mix. And so that's so interesting. I ask that because sometimes styles change the more you're in the business and you start sort of gravitating to different styles and you see them. So you start appreciating them. And I feel like that is that way for my wife and I. I mean, we don't really have any MCM pieces. And I didn't used to be a fan of it, but I've really grown to really like it and really appreciate it to the point that it'd be cool to have some of those pieces in our home. And I've noticed as well, outside of just furniture refinishing, the furniture finishing industry, that also it seems to be coming back and pretty popular with new furniture as well. So it's kind of neat to see that.
You see a lot of those pieces coming to, you know, big box stores. And mm-hmm. it's fun to be on the hunt for a lot of those mid-century modern pieces that are actually original and they aren't manufactured new. So I think that's probably one of the funnest parts of my job is that you're finding a piece that was made new, but it's actually, it's an actual antique piece. And so mm-hmm. it's like finding a new, I don't know, friend that comes and lives in your home. And it's kind of fun just to be on that treasure hunt. That's probably one of my favorite parts of my job.
Yeah, it's authentic, right? So that's really neat. So what are you working on this week?
Oh, man. Well, I just finished up a buffet and a hutch that were both traveling outside of my area. And this week I am working on redesigning a corner coffee bar and also updating some living room furniture, a coffee table and tables and a sofa table.
Oh, you got your hands full.
Yes, I do.
Looking forward to those.
Yeah, and then later in October, I'm actually prepping to do a hometown market that's pretty big here in the fall. Our county has authorized us to be able to do a market, and so this will be the first market that I've done. Gosh, it's been 2 years since I've actually been out and had a booth set up, and I'm going to be prepping a lot of MCM pieces for that.
Oh, wow. That sounds like fun. Very, very good. Now, is most of your business custom bookings, or is it mostly pieces that you pick up, refinish, and sell?
It's both. I would say probably 60% of my business is custom bookings. I love to go treasure hunt for pieces and advertise those as customizable. Mm-hmm. And that way, I'm still getting to work on a piece that I found, but then my customer gets to customize it to their liking, whatever the style of their home might be. I just post a picture of, hey, this one is available. How would you like to customize it? And so that's how I get custom bookings. And then a lot of the times, I'll have someone reach out to me and say, hey, I need a dining room set. And I actually look and search for a piece for that client. And then mm-hmm. the third step would be having someone bring their piece to me. And then we do a consultation that way. So I would say 60% of my business is custom work.
Yeah. Well, you've got a lot of experience then. So when you speak of custom bookings, was the process of pricing when you first started easy, or did you find it very, very difficult?
Oh gosh, no. when I first started, there wasn't a lot of resources as to how to price furniture. There wasn't mm-hmm. a lot of eBooks, or there wasn't a community like what we have now to mm-hmm. be able to reach out to somebody and ask, you know, how are you pricing time for this, or how do you customize like paper on the back of an item, or, you know, there just wasn't that community. And so it was by trial and error that I actually came up with my own pricing. And then kind of just over the years following some other furniture painters and what their methods were and kind of collecting all of that information and putting together something that was customized to my area. So yeah, in the beginning, it was really hard because there was no one doing it and no one in my area that was doing furniture refinishing at all. And so I had no idea how to price my stuff. And I had to really look at it as just a commission artist, as you would find somebody that would do paintings. And so I had actually reached out to a local artist that was doing murals for a lot of, we have what's called the Parade of Homes here in town that showcases custom builds and new homes. And so a friend of mine was doing some really cool techniques on walls, and just she was an artist herself. And so I had reached out to her and asked, hey, you know, when you price out these projects, how are you doing this? How are you, as an artist, pricing things for a custom, you know, how would you even go about that? And so she gave me some really good advice of how to go about meeting with people. And, you know, it's a different line of work, but, you know, we're both artists that are creating really cool feature walls or things in someone's home. And so she gave me a lot of really great resources on how to get started in that. So I'm thankful that she did, because I overcame my fear of being able to book other people's furniture in the meantime. So, yeah. And then just kind of over the years, I reached out to a couple other furniture artists and asked questions. And, you know, I had to base my prices off of what was going on in my area that, at that time. And yeah, kind of just took off from there.
Yeah, I suppose that's, you know, which is one of the reasons why this is a popular topic, is that there's, you know, when you get into commission work, there's challenges because you're actually creating a piece for somebody else. They're paying you to do it. So you want them to be happy and pleased. At the same time, you want to make money off of it. So,
right.
yeah, you want it to be lucrative for you. Would you say you had some trial and error with the process?
Oh gosh, yes. You know, just starting out, I felt that as an artist, I wouldn't say I was proud of my work, but I was just starting out. And so I think I was really undercharging a lot of what I was doing. And it was really just a wash at that point. I was practicing new painting skills and trying to build things and take things apart. I have pretty good woodworking knowledge. And so I think in the very beginning, I really didn't make any money off of customs my first year, really. It was kind of just trial and error and trying to figure out, you know, how in the world am I going to price out working and being able to pay myself and be able to pay for all the supplies. So yeah, it was kind of a wash at that point.
Yeah, and you don't want that too often, do you?
No, never.
So tell us what you do when you get an opportunity to do a custom job. What's the process of pricing?
So first of all, I just would really like to thank that person for coming to me and valuing my work. You know, they have either heard it from a friend, seen a piece in person, seen it on social media. I think it's really cool that someone would even approach you to be able to do a custom piece of work for their home, because that's something that's going to be sitting in their home forever. And so one of the very first things that I do is, you know, introduce myself. You know, how did I get started? How long I've been in business? What my preferred method of painting is. I love to let them know that, you know, these are the lines of paint that I like to use. Here's the finishes that I can offer. And then, you know, kind of just giving them an introduction about me, you know, how I got started and what I like to do as an artist. So, and then I like to find out a little bit more about them. You know, what's your personal taste? What does the inside of your home look like, depending on what piece it is? So say I have a dresser for a child's room. You know, I ask the client, well, what does their space look like? Can you send me over a photo of what this, the overall look that you're going for? And sometimes a custom piece of furniture might be the starting point of redoing an entire room for a customer. So I like to just ask, you know, are you willing to go with a color? Are you wanting to stay kind of neutral? You kind of just get a feel for what that customer is looking for. A lot of the times, the business that I do get is clients that are willing to go really bold and a lot of those statement pieces you can see on my page. And I think that's a lot of the time why someone will come to me to be able to do that kind of work for their space. So when I like to meet with clients, I do tell them up front that there is a consultation fee, and that's a non-refundable consultation fee that covers my time to come out and look at their project, take photographs of it, do measurements, and then go over an actual design with them. What I do like to do after the consultation is draw up an estimate, and included in that estimate would be things such as the design fee that I had just discussed with my client. And then in that estimate, I'm looking at, you know, is there a pickup or a delivery fee? You know, does my client need their item picked up from their home and brought to my shop? And then are they going to need delivery back to their home? I go over the exact details of what their piece entails, how large it is, does it need any repairs to the item, what type of cleaning is involved, any kind of drawer repairs, if there's any glass that's missing, if I have to have glass put into a piece, any wood repairs that might be done to the piece, veneer removal, like a top of a buffet if I need to strip off the veneer or a dresser, and then removing any paint, so that would be stripping or sanding that item, removing any hardware or structural pieces from the item. So right now I'm working on a coffee bar that my client requested that one of the shelves be taken out. And so that would be a structural change to that piece. Mm-hmm. Also fixing structures of the piece, including, you know, legs, the doors, any missing or broken hinges, and or cutting new backs to a piece. Sometimes you will purchase a buffet or dresser or hutch that is missing the back piece to it. And so that would be also included in that outline. So what I found really helpful when I go to price per line is pricing items, my time and materials together per hour. And I found that was a little easier to do because in the past I was trying to price out how many hours that I was putting into a piece and then price out exactly what the materials were that I was using. And I found that I wasn't paying myself enough. You could keep the receipts of what exactly that you're using, but it's hard to price out exactly what you're putting into a piece. You don't know how many sheets of sandpaper that you're going to actually be using when you draw up an estimate, or you can kind of get a rough estimate, but it's hard to sit and price an estimate before you've actually done the work on an item. So I found that pricing my contract agreement would be per hour instead of trying to have a listed detailed, have it itemized with everything that's on there. So other things I like to include after I put, you know, what type of work that we're going to be doing to the piece are, you know, if a client comes to me and asks, hey, I've got a space, I need a dining table for this space. Can you look for that? And that is what I call a search fee. So I let them know up front that I'm going to be spending time looking for a particular item, and it's just a one-time fee that I charge up front so that there's no confusion as to, you know, my time and looking for an item for that person. So I put that in there as a one-time fee. I also do the design consultation that I discussed earlier, and then, you know, pick up and delivery. And then say that you finish a piece. This is listed in the contract that they sign. It states that after I finish the piece, I will let them know that day that it's finished. And then I charge a storage fee if not picked up within a week of the finished date. And it also states that if not picked up within 30 days of the completion date, that it's forfeited to my business if not picked up and I'm able to sell it out on the market. I also state that all sales and customs are final and non-refundable. If there is an issue within 48 hours of getting it to your home, that we can resolve it and fix whatever is needed to be fixed. I want to make sure that my customers are happy with what they had custom made or custom painted. The contract must be signed by both parties, so I'll have them look over the estimate, and if everything looks okay, then they sign it and date it. And then I also sign it, and I make sure to include an expiration date on that design contract, because for some reason, if you're pricing changes. As an artist, you know, we value our work and we want to make sure that we increase our prices as our artistic abilities go up. I always make sure, or even supplies, you know, supplies might go up in pricing. So I always do an expiration date of 30 days after the estimate. I always consider too, when I'm pricing, you know, the price per hour that I charge is what things to consider. That would be, where are you doing your work? My shop is actually at my house, so I'm using the utilities for my house and my space. You know, what are you paying for a rented spot? What materials go into your project? And then also your time. So that's how I get a price per hour rate. Also on the contract, I always put a deadline of when that piece is to be expected to be finished. So depending on the time frame, so say that I have a dining table come in with 6 chairs, I list, you know, it's coming in on a Monday, here's exactly what we're doing to it, and it'll be finished and ready for pickup on Friday. There is a section in there that says after a 50% deposit is paid of the estimate, there may be additional changes or charges to your final invoice at pickup, depending on if there's additional work or color changes or wallpaper added or new hardware to that piece. So it just depends on, you know, if you start the piece and you realize, oh man, it did needed a little bit more repair than I thought, contact your customer, let them know what needs to be changed, and then add that to your final invoice. I guess the 5 tips that I have about creating a custom contract or doing customs is, number one, have confidence in what you do. Talk about your experiences and talk about how long that you've been in the business with your client. They value your work and have seen your portfolio and seen what you put out on social media. And I think it's important to just value yourself. Number 2 would be to start with techniques that you're really good at. So in the beginning, you know, I was only really good at maybe sanding something down and putting a coat of paint on something small. And I never really took on larger projects because I was afraid that I would screw it up. You know, someone bringing me their grandmother's hutch was a little scary at the time because I never wanted my client to feel that I didn't put good work into that. So just make sure that you start with techniques that you're really good at, but then learn new skills on other pieces that are not customs as you go so that you build up that portfolio. So that could be anywhere from doing upholstery to learning how to do stenciling, learning to build things into a piece of furniture. Number 3, and this one's huge because I've learned a lot of mistakes from this one, is stick with your personal style. This is hard to do when you are booking customs and you have clients that come to you with a particular style. But the reason that they're coming to you is because they see the work that you put out and say, oh man, I really like what you did here. So stick with what your personal style is and just make suggestions to your customers along the way. I recently had a client that wanted to do a dining room set, but in all different colors of chairs. And just discussing it with her and letting her know, hey, you know, this is actually the style of painting that I do. And I'm not huge on doing distressed or chippy pieces. I'm a clean painter. And letting her know that having chairs of all different colors might be a little distracting to her space. So we had discussed, you know, maybe let's just do 2 different colors or 3 different colors for that space, because then that was me staying true to my style and giving recommendations in a space, in a piece. Number 4, and this one's really big, have a portfolio and samples or stains of the finishes that you can do. So in my workshop, when I do have the consultation meeting in the beginning, whether that be at my shop or at someone's house, I always make sure to bring, it's a hard copy book of pictures of my portfolio. You know, I do detailed shots. I do just the stage photographs that I post on social media. So that way they can get a feel of what exactly type of work that I can do. And it's just important to showcase what you can do as far as colors and finishes go. I think it's really important for your client to be able to choose and actually see something instead of trying to email or go over the phone. It's nice to have something in their hands that they can look at and compare. Like if there was a tabletop with painted legs, they could compare the both of them together and make a decision right then, so that there's no back and forth about what color that you're going to choose, especially if you're having to order your paint. And then number five would be to know your market. Who are you selling to and who are you doing customs for? So don't undersell the other artists in your area, because there's a lot of artists in my community. I know that we have four or five that live in my area, and we all like to make sure that we're kind of on the same page as far as pricing goes. So just try not to lowball what you're doing for your work, because we're all trying to have a business and make a decent income from what we do as artists. So I have sent other furniture artists my design contract just for them to look over and see what it actually entails. And I'm happy to do that for anyone that does want to see it. But yeah, that's really how I go about booking my customs.
Wow, Danielle, you have done such a great job detailing out what you do. You've obviously put a lot of hard work into it, experience as well. The trial and error thing certainly plays into developing a contract and making sure it's thorough, as you have done. So great, great discussion, great direction for our listeners. And we really appreciate your insight, Danielle.
Thank you, Lane. Thanks for having me.
Today, Wednesday, September 30th, 2020, means that not only is it the last day of September, but it also means that it's the last day to enter the Zebra Review September theme contest on study desks. Many of you have been creating the ideal home workstation for your kids' school spaces by refinishing study desks or creating home office desks. Use the hashtag #TheZebraReview and you'll have your piece before our judging panel, as they will choose three winners. We'll be featuring a guest judge each month with our Zebra Review judges. This month's guest is Jen with Perfectly Imperfect Furniture Restoration. She was our first place winner for July. Great prizes await the winners from Pink Couture Paint, D. Lawless Hardware, Surf Prep Sanding, Gary's Big Bowls, and Zebra Paintbrushes. All pieces refinished from January 1st, 2020 to today, September 30th, 2020, are eligible for entry. Zebra Collective Quarterly Contest for Fall is open for entries as well. There are so many ways to create your furniture pieces by reflecting the inspiration of fall, with vibrant colors to dark, crisp colors of fall leaves, cheery and whimsical themes to the natural tones of the season. Make sure you tag your pieces with the hashtag Zebra Collective. We are so grateful to our prize sponsors, who range from Weatherwash, Surf Prep Sanding, The Chippy Barn, Redesign with Prima, and our Zebra Paintbrushes. All pieces that were refinished from June 1st, 2020 through October 24th, 2020 may be entered. Hey, just a quick reminder for all of you, even though it's September, we are already getting excited about the 2020 Zebra Golden Brush Awards. We had a tremendous event last year that led to recognizing many of you for your talents in multiple categories. So stay tuned as we unfold the details in the coming weeks ahead. We would love for many more people to discover the Zebra Before and After podcast. Please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast directory. It really does make a huge difference in the rankings. And thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Zebra Blogs Before and After Furniture Refinishing podcast. Today's episode is also featured on thezebrablog.com, along with contact information for today's guest. Your comments and suggestions for future episodes are always welcome, and we encourage you to share those by clicking on the podcast slide in our header at thezebrablog.com. That's zebra with an I, blog.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and happy refinishing.